dirty cover. They just did it on the back of a pickup truck. That's why we just need a parking lot for that.
Being the Transportation Committee meeting of Mount Pleasant Town Council for Monday, November the 6th. Thank you all for being here, and thank you, staff, for all the preparation that has gone into this, including the preparation of the minutes, which is item number two. Do we have a motion to approve?
Move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Have a motion, a second. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Minutes are approved. Item three is public comments. If you're here to make a public comment, please come forward. Name and address, 2 minutes. Nobody? All right. Sure. All right. We'll move on to item four, review and discussion of final recommendations for the mobility action plan. And for the public tuning in at home, this is our traffic management study. I get asked this all the time. And, but it is called a mobility action plan. And by final, does this mean these are all the recommendations we're going to get, but then we start going through them, right?
Okay. Right. We'll talk about some in more detail, and then we'll close with the finals.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Yeah, Mayor, Council, thank you so much for the opportunity to give you an update here today. And we'll follow a similar agenda to what we talked about a couple months ago. We'll look at in detail the intersection of US 17 and Houston Northcutt, and then the Coleman and Chuck Dolly, and then, like I mentioned, we'll close with some of the more overall final recommendations. So just to recap, at the US 17 and Houston Northcutt intersection, we looked at three different ways of handling the traffic there previously. One of those, as you can see, stricken out based on the impacts and the traffic performance. It didn't warrant carrying it any further, but two of the alternatives we did. And so I want to share today a little more detailed concept of those, just so we can get a better idea of what we're talking about in terms of impacts, and then we'll get into cost and traffic improvements as well. So I'm going to zoom in a little bit here. But this option, we're calling it the jug handle or the displaced left. What would happen here is we'd try to remove the left turns. This is an at-grade intersection, so no bridge or structure or anything on this one. We'd remove the left turns of all the movements except for the southbound left along 17. And for the left turn coming northbound along 17, we'd handle it with an off-ramp, which would come and tie into the existing signal here, and those lefts would then move along Mathis Ferry that way. The lefts at the other movements would use the frontage road system. Now, I want to mention a couple things on this one. Once we got into the detailed analysis, and especially looking into the future traffic, we did find that there are some potential traffic-related concerns at this intersection at McGrath-Darby, just because the growth in traffic and how close it is to that signal at Houston Northcutt. So for this concept, we're showing it as a right-in, right-out, and actually on the north side, a right-out only, just to help the traffic performance there. In terms of impacts, we are showing, and this will be the same on all of these, where you see the shaded orange, that is a potential impact based on the concept. Here, because of the access, wanting access control because of that heavy volume coming off of Houston North or off of 17, we're showing that parcel here on the southwest quadrant being impacted. Just want to mention as well, you'll see this in all these concepts, we're also showing an additional multi-use path and an additional right turn lane from Mathis Ferry onto Wingo Ways. So there are some.
Mr. Chapman has a quick question.
Yes, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Could you go back to the McGrath-Darby Boulevard?
Yes.
And 17 intersection. If I'm seeing this right, there would be no left turn there from southbound 17 into the left audience. Is that correct?
That's correct, is what's shown.
And how do you get there?
You would have to, and this is a reason that we'll get to why this may not be the best long-term solution. But you would have to take a left at 17, or at Houston Northcutt, and as we're showing here, this frontage road being impacted, you'd have to go all the way down to Coleman.
I think that was part of the original plan when widening 17 was done, and the property owners of all of the hotels and motels complained loud enough to put in what's there now. So I'm just bringing that up. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So in terms of property and access, there are some impacts that are associated with this one. So that's the jug handle. The rest of these will be grade separated options, and we'll look at several different ones. So just to recap, though, it's about a 30% improvement in traffic in delay from the no build condition. However, I want to note that there isn't enough capacity to handle all the future demand once we go to the horizon year. So while it's an improvement, it's not the silver bullet that we might hope it to be. And then looking at the number of substantial impacts, two, as I mentioned, and then the project total, just over $22 million based on our estimates today. Okay, so the rest of these now will be grade separated. And we'll look at three different interchange types: the single point, which is very similar to what's at Hungry Neck, the type urban diamond, which is similar to Bowman, and we looked at a roundabout. That will be something new. So there's not a great comp in the town currently. So these are all looking with a four-lane bridge. And I'll zoom in again here. The reason we started looking at a four-lane bridge is twofold. One, coming off and onto the Cooper River, you have two lanes along 17 at the point where you get onto the bridge. So regardless of how many lanes you've got here, you've got to get from two and back to two lanes at the bridge. So it's a little bit of continuation of that. But also in terms of impacts to the surrounding frontage road and properties, and we'll get into that a little bit later as well. But this is showing a four-lane bridge with a single-point urban interchange. So that's one intersection in here. The lefts go at the same time. It's the tightest kind of configuration that you could likely see here. So trying to reduce those impacts. Now, this does maintain the frontage roads. So it's not cutting off any of those frontage roads. And we did hold that as a constraint when we were looking at these different alternatives, because we want to keep that connectivity. It's an important system. It does, however, in this scheme, and we'll get to a few options later where we may mitigate this, but it does cause you to have to reduce the lane widths on the frontage road, which may lead to loss of the Shiro or the bike facility. So that's an important consideration in this one. But we'll get into how we might mitigate that as well. So again, showing impacts to all four quadrants. It's not necessarily taking the entire property, but it would have some impacts and potentially lead to some need for a redesign of those parcels. And then similarly, the right turn lane here, which remains the same as the jug handle option that we looked at previously. I do want to mention here, though, based on the need to get elevated at Houston Northcutt and where that bridge really needs to start getting up so you can have enough clearance, it does get into this McGrath-Darby intersection. So here it's shown as access being cut off completely. Now, in this scheme, it's a little bit more favorable because you're keeping the frontage road and you're improving this intersection so significantly that your delay, while it may not be as simple to take a right turn, you can take a right turn at the interchange and then backtrack on the frontage road. So there is access maintained with improved delay. So that's the single point. We also looked at the type urban diamond, and I'll go through these a little bit quicker because most of them have similar features. But this would be similar to what's at Bowman, and you have the two intersections instead of one. It's not quite as favorable from a traffic operation standpoint, but it's a little bit simpler, I suppose, for people to... It's more traditional, I'll say that, but a little bit more impactful because of how far these intersections have to be separated. So some additional orange, as you can see there on the screen, impacts. And then the last one we looked at is the roundabout alternative. And I want to mention the reason we looked at this is really from a safety perspective. This slows people down but maintains capacity. So there's some safety improvements here, but as you can see, the orange shading is much more extensive because you've got to move some of the intersections, realign some of the frontage roads, and it leads to some pretty significant impacts. So operationally, safety-wise, a good option, but you just weigh the impact there. So looking at those three in terms of comparison, similar delay improvement and much better than the jug handle option, so almost 60-70% in the AM and PM, I'll mention that tight urban diamond, it's not quite as good, and it does lead to, in the PM peak hour, based on our projections, some vehicles that can't process through, so not as good of a traffic impact or traffic operations perspective. Cost-wise, the single point and the tight urban are similar. The roundabout is more expensive because of those impacts, and you can see that 5, 6, and then 9 impacts, significant impacts with the roundabout option. So something to weigh there. So based on this initial analysis, we looked at and went forward with a few other alternatives with the single point, because from a cost, impact, and delay improvement, it seemed to touch on all the major points that we may want. So just to recap, this is the 4-lane bridge alternative we looked at. We wanted to see, is there a wider bridge deck we might fit in there to get more capacity on the bridge? So we looked at the 6-lane bridge. The issue with that was that it led to impacts to the frontage road system. So it would lead to cutting off some of those frontage roads, which we were holding as a constraint because we don't want to impact town-wide mobility just to solve this one problem. So the max bridge width we could fit was 5 lanes. Now it's a little bit or atypical. Is that me doing that? A little bit atypical because you've got 2 in 1 lane and 3 in the other. Thoughts of Gomer will come to mind. But this is the maximum capacity you could get on this bridge without impacting those frontage roads. And we did it in this direction with 3 coming into the town, because once you get off the bridge, it does naturally open to 3 today. Whereas going the other direction, you've got to get down to 2 lanes anyway prior to the bridge. So if you've got 3 lanes on this new bridge, and then you got another lane merging in, ultimately it's 4 lanes that are going down to 2 in a very short distance. And so even though it looks like more capacity, it actually led to a little bit worse traffic operations there. So this is the 5-lane bridge option. Now, this does have impacts to this frontage road, so we've kept it as tight as we possibly can, but it would lead to this frontage road being restricted to one way only. And we've shown it as one way southbound to allow for folks either coming off the bridge to take a right and navigate back, or again, take that left here and navigate back that way. But an impact to consider with the 5-lane bridge.
Okay, now, not to interrupt, but
yes, please.
So if you're coming off the bridge and you're coming on 17, I'm looking right where this blue line here, right where the little hand is. All right.
Yep.
So if you're going up Mathis Ferry, right, you're going to go towards Ion and Beckham High School.
Yes.
You'll come off and you stay on the left side of where that blue line is, right? Okay. So that's your, what type road is that called? That's not the frontage road. That's your access, your off-ramp.
That would be our off-ramp.
Okay. And then what I can't figure out is it brings you to here. Is that is there a signal on this side of the bridge in the bottom left corner? I see something over here on Houston Northcutt, but what happens when you come under this bridge? Come back a little bit where there's 2 lanes. All right, now come down.
Oops, sorry.
To the ramp. There you go. Come on up.
Sorry.
To the pink line on the left corner of the bridge.
Okay.
Here. Right there. Yeah. What happens there? I see a light on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to all that traffic?
This would be all one intersection. So they'd all these approaches would have their own traffic light. Mm-hmm. So coming off the bridge and going to Mathis Ferry, these left turns would go at the same time as the opposite left turns coming down towards Houston Northcutt from 17 southbound.
Okay.
And then likewise, you'd have your through volumes along Houston Northcutt, Mathis Ferry. They'd be able to go at the same time. And then your left turns going on to 17, those would go at the same time as well. So you'd have your left turns, opposite left turns going at the same time, and then your opposite throughs would be going at the same time.
Okay, and while you're there, so you would still, if you were going to the bridge and you're coming from down here by Wendy's or Melvin's,
mm-hmm.
you still come and you still have to make a left turn, right?
coming from the Cooper Arena?
No,
or from the other
from
side?
Houston Northcutt, like that's, Town Hall.
You would. Yeah, this signal is shown as remaining as, essentially as it is today.
Because that's where all the backup is now. It's all the cars trying to go to the bridge.
Right.
And they block the other lanes over. I mean, I drive it every day.
Right.
You're sitting there, and you'd be the first line at the signal, but there's three cars stuck trying to get into the two lanes turning left.
Absolutely. And so, yes, the signal spacing here is very tight. The one benefit in this scheme would be, because we've elevated all that volume that's on 17 today, you can design a much more efficient signal. So this one still has all that volume that has to get through there. However, you can push it through this intersection. You can give it much more time. Whereas today, you got to give time to those mainline people.
Because you're not dealing with all the traffic.
So hopefully you can push all that volume through and clear out those.
Okay.
But it's still very close. It is very close. Okay, so this is a 5-lane, and then the last one we looked at was, talked about those bike accommodations and the sharrows. This is, if we keep that four-lane bridge, but we push out these frontage roads to maintain, to put back essentially what's there today in terms of the lane width, so that by typical DOT code, you can keep a sharrow marking, which is where a bike and a vehicle can share the lane. So that's what's there today. This would be if you put that back. It does lead to some additional impacts in right-of-way, as you can see this orange shading along here, and then some utility impacts. But it does give you your bicycle accommodations the way that they are there today. Now, we looked at this with the 5-lane, but because you've already got to widen out for the bridge, if you widen additionally for the bike facilities, it leads into frontage road impacts that would potentially cut that off, and we didn't want to do that. So this is kind of the last alternative we looked at in terms of the bridge and interchange. And then I'm going to close with, I'm going to actually skip this and go to the full comparison. So the jug handle is what we looked at primarily. And then we looked at the 3 4-lane options, the single point type urban and the roundabout. And then we looked at 2 additional single point ones. So again, cost wise between the 5-lane and then the 4-lane with bike accommodations, similar cost. That we project. The 5-lane does give you a little bit more capacity, but it doesn't allow you to keep the frontage roads and the bike accommodations exactly as they are today. So, again, not saying one is preferred over the other necessarily at this point, but these are just for your information and the different alternative analysis that we completed. I do have a couple more things to talk about with Coleman and Chuck Dolly and then some draft final recommendations, but if you wanted to go back to anything while we're on this 17 and Houston Northcutt topic.
The only thing I've mentioned sort of as a bookmark before we go forward is that this will figure into what we're getting into about the half-step sales tax thing, because just keep these in mind and the type dollars that we're talking about, because I believe that's where that might be headed, possibly, depending on the will of the committee. All right, so go ahead. Okay. Thanks.
No problem. Okay. So that wraps the 17 Houston Northcutt discussion. We did have some additional alternatives that we looked at with the Coleman Chuck Dolly intersection. And similar to what I mentioned previously, a couple of these alternatives, based on the impacts and the bang for the buck, essentially, they weren't carried forward. So we did carry forward alternative 2, which was dual southbound rights, so it would be, and I'll show it here in a second, and then the roundabout alternative, which has been discussed previously. So with the dual southbound rights, this would keep it as a signalized intersection, but it would remove the what's today kind of an off-ramp, so to speak, that comes to a yield condition. So it's a single lane where you've kind of got to look back across your body and make sure there's no one coming, and then you make the right turn. This would use the existing right-of-way, but it would widen out a little bit to this side and give you 2 right turn lanes. And they would be under signalized control, so they would go when they get the green indication. But it would leave the rest of the intersection largely as it is today. But what we found was that does get you an additional capacity for that right turn, which can back up heavily in the peak hours of the day. And then alternative 2 is a roundabout. I won't belabor this too much because I think it's been analyzed in the past. But we did refresh the cost estimates related to the roundabout and the associated improvements nearby based on kind of today's estimates. So that's what we're showing here. And with a dual southbound right option, a 69% improvement over doing nothing in the PM, so a large, significant improvement versus a roundabout at 62%. Now, and then the cost, you know, more expensive for the roundabout versus the southbound rights. I did want to mention, though, at least to me as a traffic engineer focused on capacity, I see more capacity, less cost. That's great. However, with the roundabout, there is the added benefit of reducing speeds and conflict points through the intersection, whereas a traditional signal can lead to more crashes. So I did want to mention that as well. So that's really the comparison here at Coleman and Chuck Dolly, okay, for consideration.
Yes, sir. Ms. Chapman.
The only point I'd like to make is that with the dual southbound rights, as opposed to what we have today, it's almost impossible, unless you got eyes in the back of your head, to see what's coming from Ben Sawyer on to Coleman to get through that merge condition. So the dual southbound right turn is a much safer condition.
Right.
And that adds to the backup when you have to look behind your head to see the oncoming traffic. So I like that.
All right. Anything before we proceed? All right.
Okay. Then these last few slides here are just to recap some of what we've talked about over the past few months. So for the draft final recommendations, we have continue implementing the safety action plan, which I know has been discussed and is advancing as well, to continue implementing the pedestrian bicycle improvements, for example, the Mount Pleasant Way, to continue implementing short-term intersection improvement projects. So over 35 intersections that the town has identified throughout the entirety of the town, that whether it's turn lanes, signals, roundabouts, various improvements, in addition to these larger capacity improvements that we've talked about today. And again, those consider implementing long-term capital improvement projects, the two we talked about today, and then the other one that was mentioned previously was at Long Point Road, but that one is kind of an overlap with the Safety Action Plan, which is conducting an improvement project there, to my knowledge. And then continue enhancing active traffic management, so leveraging the town's existing and enhancing that those technological solutions for intelligent traffic management, considering a towing and recovery program, potentially staged tow vehicles in strategic locations, along with quick response and a rush hour emergency response units. And this is that summarized. And then just as a final note, kind of what will come out of this is short, medium, and long-term recommendations based on that would be sifted through from what we've talked about here today and in previous presentations. So that's all I've got. I can take any questions or.
And I don't know if we gave you feedback, and the chief is here. We have moved forward on the emergency response and two, you know, response vehicles and a plan. I guess it's a good time, chief. We were talking about possibly having that ready by the end of the year. Eric, is that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. The vehicles are in.
Really?
In a day where it's tough to get things on time.
I was going to say.
This has come pretty quickly. And so, I mean, the chief can certainly comment on the nuts and bolts of how it actually worked, but it is, it's going to be here quicker than we anticipated.
Well, how about staffing and training and that type of thing?
So we're upfitting the vehicles. We're upfitting and hopefully having done by Christmas break.
Well,
staff, the training, yes, we're working with Chef about all the training for any equipment to solve. So should be online certainly by the beginning of the year.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, instead of the traditional float, we could always put everyone in the back of the Chef vehicle.
Exactly. And don't forget the naming contest. We want to name them. So, and I think they had already contacted y'all, but at that beach management traffic wrap up for the year, they mentioned, the state mentioned that they have training and stuff. And I think y'all already knew that, but I didn't want to not convey that. Well, that's great. So, you know, there's one right off the bat. That was the quickest, easiest, least expensive way to get some relief, because even if we got all these done and paid for, one accident will slow them all down. So it's the best and the right first step. I'm thoroughly convinced of that. Yes, sir. Ms. Chapman.
And Mayor, I think we're also working on the issue with the traffic signal maintenance to make sure that it is being improved availability of staff at 24 hours a day. And if I could ask either Mr. Morrison or Mr. Aton to expound on that a little bit.
We actually have that as a discussion point on the signal system update. If you want to, we can do it now. Or
item six?
Yes, sir.
We can do it as long as that's part of it.
Yes, sir.
We can do that when we get done.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about this very thing. The one thing that ties more into this, and that is the traffic management, is we recently had a meeting with Rhythm Engineering, is the company that does the software for the system we have now. And we're looking at some different detection units and software that would enhance the adaptive capability of our system. And essentially what it does is allow you to on the fly, and this is more for incident management.
Sure, yeah.
On the fly, measure the volume out in the field. Let's say you have a bridge shut down. We can measure volumes at the ends of the corridor, and within 2 minutes, we can actually customize a timing plan for that flow right then. So that's the kind of technology that we're looking at to advance our adaptive system. So to your point, Mr. Chapman, I think we're kind of heading in that direction now.
Great. And what about the notice to the technicians for equipment issues?
We're starting to get, we've talked to them about that. They understand our need for a little bit more selective, but until they can modify their software, we're going to start getting those notices back as much as they can distill them, mainly about detection going down. Mm-hmm. And we also had some discussions about with Chief. Typically in off-peak hours, we might have someone at the police department receive that same notification along with our techs.
Right.
But if it's 3 in the morning, our techs may not get the notification, but somebody else could and could call them. So we're trying to coordinate all of that.
Perfect. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to finish up item four, it does segue us to item number five about the county's third transportation sales tax. But at what point and at what process do we go through to sort of make a final decision on the design of something of that magnitude, $85 million, which is about what, am I remembering right, the whole fix of Johnny Dodge was about $80 million.
That's right.
Like 10, 15 years ago.
Yes, sir.
And now it's one intersection.
Right. Well, we didn't necessarily anticipate the committee having to make a recommendation on a design.
Thank you.
Really.
I don't even know, 10 minutes and we're done.
Right. It's very complicated.
Yes.
And there's a lot of impacts to be considered. I think the committee wanted to understand the magnitude of impacts, what we're getting into, what we think we were comfortable saying, hold this as a line and do not touch the frontage road from here on out, versus what was acceptable. So there's been a lot of thought just on our part going into this. I wouldn't expect the committee to kind of even understand all of that. So I think, you know, the objective was to show you there is a solution. You can understand order of magnitude of impact and cost. And this still has to go through a very extensive, if it's ever funded, it would have to go through a very extensive design process that's public. And you know, that's probably 2 to 3 year process just for that one intersection. So don't need a decision. I think it's safe to say it's likely that you would need a grade separated interchange at that location for a reasonable long-term solution. And I think that's where we land. And there's still a process behind that. And as far as these, we call them draft final recommendations because we didn't want to just assume that these were all acceptable to you. So we're going to compile an action plan that the committee can review that makes sure we have captured all of the the low-hanging fruit items that we talked about. And so we'll have we're gonna have short, mid, and long term, I think, is what we discussed. Action plan.
Okay, great. That clears that up a little bit. The dollar amounts also help us as we look at item five about the transportation sales tax as well. How tough question, I know, but how long are numbers like that generally good? Right, if we're ballparking what we need from the sales tax, and it's I'll throw out $85 million, you know, and this whole sales tax, transportation sales tax referendum's not till a year from now, and then there's got to be time for that to be, you know, processed and everything. I just don't know. It's a good starting point, right? It might be different a year from now.
It probably will be different a year from now, but that is what this committee has already positioned our staff, and then now the county in a much better position. This is the level of detail they probably wouldn't even got to just on general cost estimating. So I think what they will do is take our number, and they do this with all their projects. They look at the implementation time frame. They're like, we need to have this built by 2030, and they will add inflation factors for construction.
Okay.
So the numbers that we talk about today will have to be adjusted.
Got it. Great. Y'all ready to move on to item five?
Yes, sir.
All right. Item five is discussion of proposed Charleston County third transportation sales tax.
So Mayor, I just gave a brief email last weekend that gave the letter of request. We have been coordinating on this with staff, county staff prior. We made it abundantly clear to them that anything that we give you has to go through our committee and council process after input for the public as well. So what we have given them is this list that you see here, and it very much coincides and aligns well with the study results that we just found, as well as our safety action plan that James has brought up before, and we have up for grant availability at this point in time. So no surprise here, number one project would focus on Houston Northcutt and the Johnny Dodds Corridor. Number two is more related to the safety action plan, which is the Long Point Road corridor improvements, which is more access management and some other items there. And then we have Coleman and that specific intersection at Coleman Chuck Dolly. Mount Pleasant Way spine routes are part of our capital improvement plan. And then one that's not in our plan but we're seeing is emerging now is the potential in the north area for a realignment, particularly with the town's facility there at Leven Road now, is a realignment of Darrell Creek Trail. But that's down on our list. If you were to fund one now, you need to be looking at those top three, I think.
Okay. Do these have to be in priority of 1, 2, 3, or are these just numbers 1, 2, 3, 4?
They're not in priority. They just ask for a list, and if the committee and council want to put a priority on it, that would be up to you. They just really wanted to make sure that they weren't behind when they started getting lists of projects and being able to anticipate the cost and the effort that goes into it. So they're starting as early as they could. So,
okay.
No, sir, this is not priority. I would say the last one is probably the last one you would consider just because we added it. But the other four we've already talked about.
And what's our time frame on this?
They have requested a decision in January.
Okay.
Sometime in January, they would like.
Okay.
Yeah, they already have this list, so they can start some work that I'm sure is going to be asked of them. So just by giving them the preliminary list is going to help them.
Okay. So we don't have to do it this month or December.
No, sir. Okay. They just asked, and I expected that the committee and council would eventually want to adopt some sort of list to send to them.
Right. Because we just spent a lot of time on Houston Northcutt at Johnny Dodds, but a Boone Hall Creek crossing off the Long Point Road, that is a problem, and it's a safety issue. When I used to have to drive that road every day, my biggest fear was going off the road and going upside down, you know, into the creek.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be, I'm sure, what would they do, a road on piers, something like that?
I think that is actually in there in the DOT's plan for a culvert replacement. But of course, if they get in there and do all of that environmental permitting, we this is the idea behind this project, is we would like to see a wholesale upgrade of the entire causeway with the multi-use path, Mount Pleasant Way, yeah. elevating the road, many different aspects. So I think that that's why that long point's really, I won't say it's prioritized number two, but there are a lot of important aspects to that long, that second project.
It would be priority A. There might be numbers, A, 1, 2, 3, but it would be an A, I'm sure. And I'm sure we probably have record, because isn't it us that has to go out and block it off when there's tidal flooding? It's our police that have to do that. So I'm sure we've got records on that. And those are, if they're following all the other trends, those are increasing rather than decreasing, tidal flooding. Any comment? Yes, sir.
I don't see the Ananap Boulevard improvements. Is that something we're doing already?
Yes, sir.
It's not on there.
Yes, sir. That's a CHATS guide share program project. In fact, we recently had a study team meeting, and this will be coming back to CHATS as a discussion point, is to consider using the current guide share funding that identifies that project and the previous Long Point realignment project to move that funding to the Showmore intersection, mm-hmm. Johnny Dodds, which coincides great with our map findings.
Right.
And they're 1 mile apart. So that discussion is at the CHATS level. And
right, we saw at the last CHATS meeting moving that money up to 2024. So that's good.
And we've had those discussions with the DOT, their regional team here, about getting that started as soon as possible. And we don't need a feasibility study on it. We're going to go straight to design.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion on that? All right. Thank you. Move up to item 6, which is update on ongoing projects. And item A is the light sequencing, or did we complete that already?
We have a general update.
Okay,
before we get to that, but we're going to get to that.
Lay it on us.
I will run through the updates of sort of our major projects. We first have Patriots Point intersection improvement here. So we have some more recent photos from the field. TrueLuck, our contractors out there installing that water quality device on the Patriots Point approach. You can't tell from the roadway, but it's a 22-foot excavation out there right now. So this is a photo from the field. A lot of things going on there on that approach. So they are moving forward with the installation of that design. And then you may have seen, if you've driven through the intersection, the installation of the final mast arms are being put in, and the signal will then be switched over to that from where it is existing today. So moving forward with that project. But Vaughn Ed Key Parkway, we just did the dedication ceremony for this last week. On the first, really good attendance, great, ode to Mr. Key there, Officer Key and his family there. So that is wrapped up. We are going through some final punch list items, including working with Dominion to get the final roadway lighting installed on that project. Billy Swales Phase 4B, going through the final phases of right-of-way acquisition. 90 to 95% have been right-of-way required, have been acquired, and working through some last negotiations with some property owners. And then also additional permitting and utility coordination is going on. We have a BAT survey that's about to begin as part of the federal requirements, and then continued MS4 review by the town's staff. Maritime Port District, we have received the mast arms for this project, which was holding up the project. So the signal contractor should be out here in the coming weeks to place those foundations. That last utility conflict has been resolved. So that last bit of roadway work will be complete as well. All American Boulevard, phase 1 and phase 2. So we have completed or updating permits for phase 1. It was completed design-wise, again, back in 2012 or so. And so just updating that with the DHEC processes and hoping to take this project out to bid early 2024. And begin construction as well. Other smaller projects, the intersection improvement of US 17 and Mathis Ferry Road. This has made a lot of good headway. The majority of the drainage associated with this project has been installed. You'll see that the turn lanes for both the Mathis Ferry and for the northbound 17 approaches have been milled out, and we're waiting on final paving for that, which will come and coincide with the Venning Road approaches and the restriping there. So moving on along at a pretty good clip here for that project. Shim Creek Bridge bike lanes. Again, this project went out to bid. We received no bid, so we've gotten back with DOT and looking to take this project back out to bid here next month, and hopefully to begin construction in early to mid 2024. I won't go through all of these projects. I'll touch on some of the highlights for at least Mount Pleasant Way. So as you know, we've got really kind of two grants out currently. One's a neighborhood accessibility and equity grant, which would look to fund the design for the entire spine route. Also, as part of that safety action plan grant that we submitted for Safe Streets and Roads for All, there are three segments of Mount Pleasant Way, Rifle Range, Mathis Ferry, and Long Point associated with that ask, in addition to the other safety improvements. We're going through the final stages of approval with Charleston County for Greenbelt funds for the Carolina Park and Park Avenue Boulevard Trail, and have begun our application for another segment of Rifle Range from Vinning to Bragg Drive, and along Long Point from I-526 to Whipple through Greenbelt funds as well. Other things to note, the Sweetgrass Basket Parkway construction is complete. They're wrapping up some punch list items on that. That included a bus shelter there at the Charleston County DMV and the Isle of Palms Connector. And we have our project, the Hamlin Trail, which would connect the Move On Ed Key project to existing facilities on Rifle Range, out to bid now. And we should be closing that here within the next 15 days. So we'll look to see who has bid on that and get construction started quickly. And as an update on existing projects, happy to answer any questions before we jump into updates on traffic signals.
Any questions on those projects? Yeah. That's a lot of grants, a lot of Greenbelt money. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So an update on the performance of the traffic signals. Brad and I will kind of tag team this one for you. So we've got a number of different updates. The last time we brought this to you, we were still in the process of replacing those old Hawkeye systems on Coleman Boulevard. Those have all been upgraded to that new thermal flare detection units. We've also are in the process of upgrading detection on Long Point Road and Whipple Road as part of that mast arm project. Of course, the Maritime Port District project we just were discussing has some new Wavetronics adaptive detection units that we're beta testing for that location. Other things that we look to be kind of more proactive that Brad touched on a little bit. So we obviously, our signal technicians every morning are going through and checking the health of the system on our roadways and major corridors, US 17 and Coleman, Ben Sawyer in particular. And then we did have a meeting that Brad discussed with our adaptive signal control providers, Rhythm, about not only looking at this new technology that they're rolling out, but in a more proactive stance, looking back at our existing software and hardware on site. Some of it's reaching sort of its end of life. Of course, that goes down in the field while traffic is going, it's not necessarily a quick fix. So looking at some of those longer term prioritizing replacement of old equipment that hasn't yet failed, but setting up a program to kind of proactively replace that. So that's really the update as far as it relates to sort of ongoing traffic signal discussions, and then we can segue into some of the concerns that we receive from citizens on a daily or weekly basis, and how, what they really are categorized under from an umbrella standpoint, and how we address them and kind of go through some of the nuances of the signal system and why things may be operating and what seems to not necessarily be the appropriate matter there.
Yes, I know that this committee in particular gets questions and requests of information and just general complaints about things, right? So we're obviously aware of that. We get a lot of that ourselves. So what we wanted to talk about a little bit is what we think we can do in that regard, because a lot of it really is education. 95% of the calls that we take are generally, it's not a failure of equipment or it's not acting correctly, it's a congestion issue is generally what it comes down to. And the person is probably asking, here's a typical, why can't I get more green time? And of course, some of that has a lot to do with discussion of, if you got 50,000 of your 70,000 vehicles at one intersection are coming through, when the majority of the time, just by proportion allocation, it's going to go to that movement. So we do have flexibility. We try to look at that all the time, particularly at constrained intersections. Hamlin's one of them that we get a lot of complaints about, particularly at the beginning of the school year when people are adjusting to travel routes. But we talk to those folks and we try to explain what it is about the signal, how it's operating, and why it's operating that way. Now, sometimes people will often, I come through the intersection every morning at Houston Northcutt right out here, and I'm coming from North Mount Pleasant. Mm-hmm. I turn left from 17 onto Houston Northcutt. 9 times out of 10, I make it through the signal. Sometimes I don't. Generally, what that is there's a poke call on one of the 3 signals that basically constrains the amount of time that signal can adjust for progression through it. So there are nuances. Another intersection we have both leading and lagging protected left turns, meaning medium protected left turns at the beginning. You shut it off, and we also give it at the end. You may come up at the end and say, that was only 12 seconds, but we're just trying to get more through the intersection. And they'll say there's something wrong with the signal. So it's not generally a problem. Sometimes it is a problem. And that's obviously when we immediately get on it as far as a maintenance issue. But I think one of the things we can do is be more proactive about answering questions about this or giving people the resource to ask the question. And one of the things, I haven't talked to James Spurley about this, but we were talking about maybe getting for our webpage, just a small moniker or whatever for signal timing concerns, mm-hmm. so that we can both be reactive and responsive to the citizen as well as collect data. Because one thing we always ask when we get these folks on the phone is like, well, tell us exactly what happened so we can understand it, when it happened, so we can go back and look at our histories, etc. And so that'll be good data for us, and also, enhancing our frequently asked questions, things like that. So I think that's one thing that we can do to be more responsive to the citizens, and this committee and others can also just point them to that location, say, look, there's a location you can get very specific information that will help us with that. So I'll be quiet and listen to anything.
I think that'd be a great idea, because that's one of the biggest things we get is concerns about traffic signals. And sometimes it is an issue, but sometimes it's not really an issue. It's something that does not have to do with the signal itself. And if we can make that a pretty quick link for people to put their question out and get an answer back, that would be fantastic. So I think you'd have our support for that. I know that.
We're going to pursue that.
All right. Great.
Preemption's another one. Yes. I thought about fire truck could be going down the road.
Yes.
It's preempting 4 or 5 signals out, mm-hmm. meaning it's stopping everything. Mm-hmm. Fire truck turns at the second signal. It's still preempted those signals, and people say, well, what's happened? Luckily, we have history. All of our signals, I can go back and look at the history of the phasing. We can see those things. And people generally understand. They may not like it that it's right. that way, but they at least they understand, and they got a response like, oh, okay, I understand. Right. So
good.
I think education is going to be more important for us.
Sure. Yeah, and to dovetail off at least the preemption, as part of that program that was installed back in 2016, there is an app associated with that preemption unit that not only allows the user to talk to the signal when they're approaching a red, they'll receive a warning if they're going too fast, get a prompt a few seconds before it turns green. That it was about to, but it also talks with the emergency response unit. So we may look as well as pairing up with fire on pushing that app out a little bit more strongly. So that way, folks that are navigating our roadway systems and have that on can hear, a fire truck approaching from rear, from right. It also allows them to speak kind of vehicle to vehicle. And then in respect, like if a cyclist is using it and a vehicle is using it, they will talk to each other and say, vehicle approaching from rear, approaching cyclist up ahead. So there's some safety benefits associated as well.
Great. While we're in ongoing, I lost my agenda. Ongoing projects, would you
yes, sir.
Decipher for us the the Highway 41 and interim improvements?
Well, first of all,
I want to thank the committee for following my recommendation at our last meeting to send a letter to Charleston County to implement the interim improvements on Highway 41. The Highway 41 project has been going on before I was even on council. We still don't have a plan that's approved. What I asked and what the committee agreed to do was ask Charleston County Council to implement the interim improvements at Joe Rouse and Highway 41 within 60 days, or turn it over to us and let us implement those improvements. We've gotten a response back from Chairman Sass saying that they've had some issues with getting the contractor to bid on the project. They've talked to DOT and made some revisions in terms of the time of day to do the project, because they have gone up a bid three times and all three times got no bid. The changes they've made include doing the project during the day while they have a temporary detour in place. The interim project includes double left turn out of Joe Rouse, continuous during the day, southbound, while southbound 41 traffic continues past that intersection. What the county wants to do is to put out another bid in mid-December to do this project, and that's mid-December of 2023, and to get better bids. DOT has agreed to allow them to do that. They've talked to some of the contractors out on the street who say that they would bid on it, given the fact they could do it during the day. I'm not sure I'd want to be out there at night along that road in the dark with the waterways right next to it. My suggestion is that we give them another chance, because they're bidding it out next month, mid-December, and I hope that they get a good bid and we can at least start some improvement to Highway 41 that we've been working on for now going on 5 years. I know at least 5 years. This would be a start. And again, there was some information put out by some people in Park West saying that they wanted an answer about action or road going into the park and other things. This is a good start. This is a very good start. And if we can get it underway, I think it'll make a lot of improvements to 41 and help the residents of Park West, Dunes West, and other subdivisions in that area. I'm not sure that you need a motion, Mayor, because it was a county's project
right. All
along that we gave money for.
Right.
And so I would like to allow them to go forward, put out their bids in mid-December, and see if we can't get something going to improve traffic on Highway 41.
Agreed. Thank you for that explanation. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Any comments from committee members? Any questions? Thank you, staff. Thank you for a great meeting and great updates. If there is nothing further before this committee, we will stand adjourned.